Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
Whoa. Whoa. That's a new voice.
Who is this sexy man?
Is that Christos?
Oh, no. It's me.
Ah, that's the voice I'm used to.
I'm just doing the Pontypool voice again.
Oh, the radio voice.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. It was only like last episode.
A lot happens between then.
Yeah, a lot happened. I've been regaling you guys with my...
Vampire Diaries story.
There was that too.
Oh, yeah.
Different Roman customs from the basic role-playing Rome.
I thought you said women weren't allowed to drink.
Weren't allowed to drink wine, apparently.
Yeah. Public drunkenness was taboo.
Yep, that's why they watered down their wine.
Yeah.
All right. Good memory, guys.
We have been regaled.
And now the listeners have been regaled. Yeah. So were women allowed to drink, like, hard liquor then?
Wine's off the table, but
I'm just thinking
whiskey. Whiskey's okay. You know, I think we'll keep drinking this whiskey and then forget we invented it so that the Scottish people can say they did. Wine's the only alcohol?
Hmm. I don't know.
One thing about the book, it says this is the rule, and they also give an example of one guy who beat his wife and perhaps even killed her for drinking wine.
Wow. And was he drinking wine at the time?
No.
Where's my liquor?
Men could drink wine. And people, like, he's not even arrested or anything or brought to trial. Mm. People just, okay, that was acceptable because she violated that custom.
Wow.
But it would have been good to see, okay, this is what the custom is. And yeah, you could beat your wife to death for violating it. But in actuality, blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't, the author doesn't say how often women violated it, because then I think back to the TV series Spartacus.
Right. And they're drinking every other scene.
Right.
And every scene.
Of course, Spartacus is not historically accurate, the TV series. But I would still like to see how far off the mark it is.
And for that matter, does it hold true for noble women as well as commoners?
Exactly, yeah. But I was surprised.
I'm looking forward to that regaling.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you finish the answer, that book, let us know.
Or we could just play and find out.
Well, we will
I have
play.
A character.
Well, that is, if he finishes the book, to know to find out, to let us find out.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
That could be our first adventure, getting the women to be allowed to drink.
No, I was thinking, you have a very optimistic. I was thinking of sort of convincing my wife to drink and then beating her to death and seeing if anything happened to my character.
Like dark games, then.
I like how you automatically go to, that's an unjust law, let's change it. And I'm like, let's push it to the extreme and see what happens.
So I got dibs on the freedom fighter. Wayne, who do you want? I'll take the wife beater.
I role play to fulfill my fantasies.
Oh, that sounds real good, doesn't it?
Nah, no, not at all.
That was sarcasm.
I'm so glad it's you.
Yeah, but speaking of Vampire Diaries, that started showing on cable in Japan.
Hmm.
So I've watched the first two episodes last night.
Now you recommended that to me.
Yeah, I saw it at the local DVD rental place.
Didn't pick it up. Yeah, they've had it in the video stores for a while, but now it's on TV. And full disclosure, I like shows like Gossip Girl, and I like the first couple seasons of OC.
Hmm. Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights. Well, does that just count as a high school show? I don't think so.
Really, it transcends it, really.
Right. It's a story of a small town.
Glee until it got too singy.
I only liked Glee for about the half of the first season. Yeah, and then it got too singy. Yeah, and then too issue-y.
So I was right.
Yeah.
Other ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I sat through Twilight for a research on the vampire episode, and I there's just too many similarities to that in Vampire Diaries. I don't know.
Because you've seen Vampire Diaries?
No, I haven't.
From what I told you.
From what Lyle
Oh, I forgot
described.
About that regaling about that one we got.
Yeah. Boy, it's been a great day for you two.
Can you guess which of those topics Lyle picked up actually regaled me?
I guess the premise in Vampire Diaries is...
There's a vampire who writes a diary. Ooh, booyah.
He does write a diary. And
him too. I thought it was just the cute high school girl.
And she writes diary too. And that's part
that's
of the connection.
That's why it's an S, Vampire Diaries.
But then she's not a vampire. Vampire and non-vampire diaries would be... Okay, now we're just...
Maybe that's too long.
Story. Yeah.
So he goes to high school. He passes himself off as a high school student. The main, the female lead's really, really attractive. Her friend's
that's
really
why you're
attractive.
Enjoying it?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
So that's why I'm enjoying it more than True Blood.
The acting's good. That's pretty decent. Yeah.
The Vampire Diaries, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Vampire Diaries?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say I'd want to see episode 3.
I'll have to watch Vampire Diaries.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about Cosmic Patrol.
Yes. Campaign Confessions, Cosmic Patrol.
Is it going to be a Campaign Confessions?
Kind of ish.
The good thing about Campaign Confessions is we get to critique somebody else's game. And because of the nature of Cosmic Patrol, I guess we'd be critiquing ourselves. I don't know.
Right.
That would just hurt too much.
So, you know, the scene that Wayne run really sucked. Oh, they're talking about my own scene.
Actually, we should probably explain that, which is a good place to start to give a rundown on the game.
Hey, Wayne, could you?
Yeah, sure. So we got a free kind of reviewer copy of Cosmic Patrol.
Thank you, DriveThruRPG.
Yeah, because we're of our DriveThruRPG affiliation. So it's put out through Catalyst Games. And I guess what attracted me to it is it's kind of like a 1930s sci-fi pulp feel, but it's a really kind of rules-light story. Well, maybe not story-heavy, but it's just kind of like a different role-playing game than some of the other games we've played. In that the role of Dungeon Master, in this case they call it a lead narrator, changes with every scene. So it pretty much is just a group of people sitting around telling a story in turn, and then there are some sort of really simple die mechanics that go along with it. And after reading that, the book is really well put together, the artwork inside is really nice, and I just said, that's different from what we've been doing, and I'd like to actually try it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of why it hooked my attention.
Yeah, I think that you said the name of the game master, they call it the lead narrator. I think that's a really good description, because it isn't as much of a role-playing game as other ones. It is really storytelling-y. Yeah. It's good. Really good. One of the things I liked about it is that each player has three tokens that are called plot points, and you can spend them to declare something happening in the story.
Pretty much do anything.
Yeah. It was really good fun. Like, we were doing one scene where we were kind of stuck in a situation, so I used a plot point to make something explode and distract everybody so we could get out of the situation.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you did, because I was running a blank as to what to do in that situation.
Hmm.
Actually, I was a little bit concerned with running the plot points, only because they sound very much like Benny's for Savage Worlds, in that you can use them for a lot more than you can use Benny's for, to basically, as you said, Chris, declare something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Lyle and I pretty much, you know, railed against Benny's in the Savage Worlds episode, so I'd actually considered not using them, but I guess...
Well, that's the main argument you had against Benny's was the way that you earned them, not against their use, per se.
Yeah, and so, if you kind of follow the rules in Cosmic Patrol, it's the lead narrator gives someone a plot point for a good narration.
Oh, no kidding. So then it is very similar to Benny's. You just didn't do that.
Yeah, and maybe it was because we only played three scenes, so it was kind of a short game. So,
and each scene was only about an hour at the most.
Yeah, at most. And you start with three, and maybe that's really all you needed. So I could... maybe see just getting three a session.
Yeah, I only actually used the one. Mm. I think everybody used one, maybe?
I used two.
Oh, two, yeah.
What did you think of the plot points, Lyle, since I know you and I both kind of didn't like Benny's?
My problem with Benny's was how you earn them, not necessarily, because I like the style points in Ubiquity.
Right.
I think they're...
In Fate, was Fate Chips?
Yeah.
So they're fine. Mm. The plot point, because... And I like the name plot points.
Mm.
So I found it encouraged me not to use them, not to manipulate a die roll or something, but to manipulate the story, which seemed to be the point of the whole game. But could I just back up a bit?
Yeah.
And because I think one of the maybe the unique thing about Cosmic Patrol is that the storyteller or the game master rotates around the table.
Right.
I think people would be curious how that really happens, because that was certainly something I wondered about.
Yeah, so I guess...
So maybe if you could just get into even the story and break it down, like the three scenes and then what...
Of the one we ran?
Yeah, the particular story, because I think that would help people understand how it rotated between the three players.
Okay, so I guess what we did for this one is I kind of wrote the adventure that we played. And there were going to be three of us, And so I wanted to give everyone a chance to kind of be the lead narrator. So I kind of came up with three scenes, and I printed out a sheet with each scene, and it had kind of like a short introduction of the setting, and then it had objectives that the characters were kind of supposed to achieve in the scene. Then it had things called cues, which are sort of one or two phrases or words about interesting things in the scene to kind of hopefully keep people on track when they were narrating. And then it gave suggestions for enemies and obstacles for each scene. And basically what happens at the end of each scene, lead narration just passes to the person on the left. So everybody is playing a player character in the game, but one player also takes the role of the lead narrator, and just their character goes last. So it's kind of really different from, a traditional role-playing game where one player is the game master or storyteller and only plays NPCs.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, especially how you had the three scenes set up, but each scene got progressively further away from the ideas that you had. We completely went off the rails, but it was really good fun because of that. I really liked the narration part of it as well, wherein you would roll a die contest versus whoever the enemy or the skill roll that you needed. But instead of just saying it's a success or a failure, you get to narrate what happens depending on whether you win or lose. And I'm not sure if we were playing to the letter of the rule, but we were even narrating the players allowed to what happened when they lost.
I don't think there's any real by-the-book way to do it because it is such a loose system. Mm-hmm. I mean, they say that with any role-playing game, your main goal is to have fun. But in this one, I think it's a storytelling game where so you narrate. So.
Yeah, and it was a ton of fun. I played a Kung Fu Master guy, so I spent most of the time screaming and throwing dice on the table. What?
You do that normally, even when you're not playing Kung Fu guy. How is that any different from a normal game?
Actually, I do that during a lunchtime, too. Sandwich! But, yeah.
Jeez. What were you thinking the lead narrator there, Lyle?
I think I thought it was a lot of fun. So, the three scenes. One was kind of the setup, the kidnapping.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the second scene was a investigation, and the third scene was going to be the confrontation, the showdown. And so Chris and I didn't know what the second scene or the third scene were going to be, so it was a mystery to us, and we were the later narrators, so I narrated the second scene, and I didn't know what was going to follow. So that certainly didn't set Chris up for the third scene, which was supposed to take place on Neptune.
Yeah,
and we were
still on.
They're
driving through an industrial park, and I look at it, you're on Neptune.
Yeah. So, I was kind of thinking about that. Looking back, I wonder, I could have given you guys your sheets for the scene.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that kind of would have not killed the fun of it, but...
I think it was more fun with the mystery.
I think that's...
And the surprises.
Yeah. It was definitely more difficult because you had to really be on your toes. And, my entire thing was improvisation. Mm. But, I had a blast with it, so...
Yeah. But it was good because at the end of scene one, we were all going to go talk to this particular person. So in order for me to link that to scene two, I just made that person one of the bad guys.
Right, right.
So then that adds a surprise for you, Wayne, because you didn't expect that person would necessarily play a very prominent role or that they would be one of the main villains.
Yeah.
I think, both the rules, it is very rules light. Mm. I mean, every stat is a particular die type, very similar to Savage Worlds, actually.
Yeah, it is very similar to Savage Worlds.
But unlike Savage Worlds, which has attributes and skills, this kind of has attributes and that's it. There are no skills. And you roll them and add them together. It seemed very intuitive. It seemed really easy for anyone to pick up.
Hmm.
So they go, my combat says D6, right? Pick up a D6 and pick up a D12. That's the dice you... The wild die you always use. Roll them, add them together.
Right.
I think people could really catch on to that quite quickly. And there was a luck stat. So it meant that if you roll the same number, if your stat luck stat was 6... and you roll a 6, then you automatically win.
Right.
Which was a lot of fun.
And I think Chris got that about every single roll.
Yeah, man.
I don't know how he managed to, but all I hear is, I win. I win.
I was acing every single roll on my thing.
Yeah, he's Kung Fu Master.
It was great.
That was pretty funny.
So before we started recording, we were talking about how this game, Cosmic Patrol, would be a great gateway or introduction to role-playing games.
Yeah, I really agree.
Because it really combines like those, I'm going to call them storyteller games, yeah. where everybody kind of takes turns adding to a story.
Right.
I think Once Upon a Time.
That's one where you like draw cards.
You draw cards to tell the story.
It reminded me a lot of just like sitting around a campfire back in the days of the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, kind of. And then the next person goes on.
Plus, then it had simple but clearly RPG mechanics, so people would get used to it. So it's not like you were playing Once Upon a Time or sitting around a campfire, and then somebody says, "Oh yeah, you might enjoy D&D," and then bring out a big rule book, and they're like, "What's with all these dice?"
Scared the crap out of somebody.
They've already be familiar with all the different sided dice, and I think some games we kind of critique Savage Worlds and Fate, where they try to be very easy, they say.
Right.
But there's always like, it seems to be like that one extra step that made something.
Such as like not adding the dice in Savage Worlds, which isn't difficult, but.
Yeah, the choosing, and then you had attributes and skills, and why did you have both when really you could have just gotten away with rolling skills, or Fate, where.
Yeah, the pluses and minuses.
Seems
really easy, but you just got
one extra step. And this, there was never a time where I thought, oh, this seems added on or unnecessary. Like everything seemed to be there to have
roll
fun.
Roll these two dice, add them, and compare them to another die roll that your opponent made or a difficulty number.
Yeah.
And then they had a thing called cues on your character sheet, which were basically like catchphrases.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good because instead of saying, you know, having a little paragraph or a couple paragraphs describing the character's personality, you just throw down a few catchphrases. And that would give somebody who was, let's say, playing a pre-generated character a quick idea what kind of person this is.
I wanted to add that for the mission sheets, as you said, Wayne, they also had cues on them. And I thought that was really a really good addition for whoever's playing the storyteller at that point. Sorry, was it narrator?
Lead narrator.
Thank you. Yeah. In that, you know, it's that old adage, if you ever run out of something to do, have a guy walk in with a gun. It's kind of just a list of thematically appropriate things that you can throw in.
Different guys walking in, yeah.
Killbox
walking
with
a ray
gun.
Guy walks in with a rifle.
Automatic. Yeah, some of the, they didn't really get used, and that's fine, because we were having a good time, but some of the cues I had put on the sheet, for example, in the bar scene, were things like dim lighting, slippery floor, rickety bar stools, things like that. Where,
so you were going to have a bar fight.
Well, I mean, you go to a bar in an action movie, there's not going to be a bar fight.
Well, you had a bar fight.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying there always will be a bar fight if you go to a bar in an action movie. Mm. But it could be, sort of anything. It could be either for the lead narrator, you know, to kind of keep things on track, or it could be for one of the players to look down and say, oh, we're, you know, I mean, it's a bit intuitive. They say, oh, we're in a bar, so I grab an empty beer bottle and smash them over the head.
Yeah.
But just kind of one more thing to remind players of what they can do.
It's very similar to Aspects in Fate, except that it doesn't have the rule structure behind it. It's, again, a much freer system.
Yeah, there's like no mechanical benefit at all to the cues.
Mm.
Sorry, one of the things that was a little bit tough, even though I guess it didn't really matter, but in setting up the game, there's a section on modifiers. You know, and obviously it's for people who haven't really played before, and they say, you know, positive modifiers are good, negative modifiers are bad. But I guess my one beef with the book is then they don't give any examples. So you almost have sort of no idea how powerful a +1 or a +2 bonus would be. I mean, they didn't need a scale because that's just kind of not the game that Cosmic Patrol is.
Mm-hmm.
But at least a few examples to give you a baseline.
Yeah.
Would have been helpful, I think. We didn't use modifiers that much, but in setting up the game, I remember that being a
when you get wounded to a certain point, you get like -1 to your brawn and -1 to your brawn in combat.
Right.
We played, I think, up to 5 would probably be good, with 5 being a really big one. Because with the D12 being the highest die, you can get up 24 max, and a 5 would be pretty big in that. Sorry, it's getting a bit too mechanical, but...
No. Now, the standard theme or setting is like kind of a 1930s science fiction.
Yeah, almost Flash Gordon-y.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I get based
Buck Rogers.
On like the the illustrations and kind of the names they'd given.
But
big glass bubble helmets on the space guys,
But we didn't play with that style.
No, we didn't.
So what genre did we use?
Instead of Space Patrol, it was.
instead of Space Patrol, it was Soul Patrol, because we played blaxploitation sci-fi game.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, Lyle, that actually ended up being more fun than the standard one, probably.
Well, I think so.
Well, no, it actually sucked.
Well, let's say, because we didn't play the standard one to actually compare the two. But
I think, unless you were really familiar with the different tropes or cliches of a Buck Rogers or a Flash Gordon story, then I think you could get a little bit lost if you were a narrator and you got handed a scene. What kind of characters could you throw in? How do the NPCs react? How do they speak? Because we had blaxploitation, and even though I don't think any of us are particularly big fans of blaxploitation movies, we kind of had an idea what kind of characters they and what kind of themes they deal with.
Right.
So there, you know, we had some racism in there, the honky tonk bar. So I changed the space bar to a honky tonk bar where everybody's white.
Which was appropriate because that's kind of what I was going for.
P-funk playing in the background, yeah.
Not at the bar.
There was funk music.
Yeah.
You had changed luck to Wayne to funk on the character sheet, so that was funny. Mm-hmm. And then we played, like, I was the foxy lady, so kind of like Foxy Brown?
Yeah, it was Pam Grier's character. As Foxy Brown or Tamara Dobson as Cleopatra Jones, which is why the character was actually named Isis Dobson.
Okay. I'm
trying to find something else.
And then there was Shaft character, Galaxy...
Tyrone Galaxy Jones.
Yeah, and then there was the Kung Fu Master.
Yep.
Frank Dragon Kelly.
Kind of based on Jim Kelly, the guy who played opposite Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah. So there are actually a few kind of real names in there.
And I think that kind of genre was easy to hang on to. Mm. And if you're looking at, like you said, as a gateway game, maybe Blaxploitation isn't the best as a gateway game.
Yeah, I don't think I'd run a Blaxploitation game at a convention.
might not be so good, yeah.
But like 80s action.
Mm.
Yeah, I was saying Saturday morning cartoons.
Or Saturday morning cartoons would be really good. Well, maybe Saturday morning cartoons would be good if you were using it just for role players in general, because, you know, people who would buy the Transformers.
Right.
Maybe
you know, series on DVD is the kind of person that might play role playing games.
I was going to say, maybe a specific cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than a collection.
Like G.I. Joe or Transformers. The thing is, I think any genre that A, your audience is familiar with, and the more familiarity, the better, and B, something with a lot of cliches to hang on to, because again, there will probably be a lot of ad-libbing as you go along. So it's good to have that.
Yeah, the whole game is practically ad-libbing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But because of that,
I could say even like a teenage high school.
I could see that.
If you had like mixed...
With vampires.
Vampires. Yeah, there you go. Oh, it's writing itself. No, but somebody could do that. And it's like, and it turns out he's a vampire.
Yeah.
And he's going to high school. Oh, you know, I don't watch... I've seen a Scary Movie.
Right.
But I haven't seen a lot of the others. I don't know if they're all made by the same people, but it's like Scary Movie, Disaster Movie.
High school movie.
Yeah, and if you play along like that broadly... Mm. I think that would be fun for a mixed group. But by mixed group, not only do I mean men and women, but I also mean like people who are role players and non-role players.
Right, yeah, definitely.
And then the non-role players could just kind of go with like the movies that they've seen. And if people are familiar with teen dramas, so that could be something to hang on to. And of course, set in space.
Yeah.
Teen drama in space. And for some reason, you are like
in space.
You know, sometimes I think 90210 when they jump the shark and then suddenly they're investigating all these crimes or something like that.
90210 in space.
Yeah, anyway, you would put, you know, 90 put in area codes or whatever emphasize that, you know. Welcome to the OC Gamma. Biatch. Yeah. You know.
Sector OC in space. Yeah.
Space biatch.
Gosh, Brandon, if only he were human.
Instead of a robot.
Stop judging, Ma. Stop judging.
As you said, it's kind of a real introductory game, and I'd kind of like to see what would happen if you handed it to someone who hadn't really role-played before.
It's unfortunately that our test subject was sick today, Yujiro.
Yeah. I think he was sick on purpose.
Yeah. I'm coming up with the don't want to do this and Titus.
Yeah. I said it was the GM jitters.
GM jitters.
And the thing is, I guess, because the lead narrator changes at kind of the end of each scene, there's no set time that anyone has to GM. It's just kind of like...
The objectives are helpful, and you kind of make an assessment. Did they achieve these? Can they achieve these? Because they might have done something where it's impossible now. And that's how I decided to pass and move on to the scene three, because it was just, all right, you got two of the objectives, and the third one you blew. You weren't going to get that. So, yeah, it's now time for scene three. Chris? Yes.
And I threw out the paper.
Yeah.
Let's see. Make your way through the jungle. Okay, no jungle.
Yeah, I guess there are a few things that changed. One was the luck mechanic. And basically,
or funk.
Or funk. In this case, they call it funk, yeah. And when you generate the character, they say just roll a d12. And that's the number you get. And then whenever...
That's the luck number.
That's the luck number. And whenever your die reads that number, you automatically succeed.
Which die?
They say your stat die. So I thought that was kind of strange, because if you roll a d12, your stat die may be like a d8. So it just seemed like there was less a chance of actually rolling that number or even having a chance. So I just said whenever any die comes up as your luck number, because the normal die you roll along with your stat die is a d12.
And, you know, I think that really helped out the game, because it's...
As someone who rolled it almost every single roll?
Well, yeah, but you guys did a few as well. No, but I think the game, even the standard setting that they have it in, is a very kind of pulpy, action-y kind of thing, and that goes really well with lots of player success, things exploding and people, you know, kicking lots of bad guys' butt. So I think the more you get that kind of critical success, that automatic success, the more fun it is for something short and sweet like that.
So for you, big dice equals big fun?
Per the genre, yeah. For this, like, in, I don't think it would work in a World of Darkness campaign, but for something like this, totally.
One of the other things I changed sort of about Danger is looking at the pre-generated characters, they have a huge number of armor spaces. And whenever you take a point of damage, you mark off a point of armor. And they were like 10, 12, 15 points of armor. And then once all your armor is gone, then you actually start working on your health points. And that's where you actually start getting negatives to your die roll. But again, kind of going for the genre, like even if you read kind of pulp science fiction, that's full of like one shot, one kill, or the guy just punches someone and knocks him out. And same holds true for, you know, blaxploitation. You know, you punch someone across the jaw and they're going to drop. So what I did is I sort of reduced the number of armor points that people had by like half or sometimes even a third, and then even doubled the damage that the weapons did, because I figured, you know, make it a little bit more dangerous. But I guess you said you didn't really feel in danger, Lyle, but I guess that's not really the point, because in a, I guess in any kind of role-playing game, if a character dies, that player's out. So,
which actually I don't think would matter that much here, because it is, because it lasted all of 3 hours. If one person got out, then pass them narratorship next and keep going. Easy enough.
Does Cosmic Patrol, do Catalyst Game Labs provide scene sheets?
Yes.
Because I think that would be good. Instead of like a module, like classic D&D. I mean, I thought those old modules were fantastic. But I could see you can get like little, almost like a little folder, and you open it up and it's got, I don't know, like 20 adventures in there. You know, you got like 3 pages for this adventure, 5 pages for the other, and each page is a different scene. Again, that could help when you're trying to sell it to the non-role or the casual role player or the non-role player, where it's almost like a how to host a murder mystery. And those packs, you get one mystery.
Right.
But here it could be, you know, how to do Cosmic Patrol, then it's basically 20 different evenings that you can have.
Yeah, in the main rulebook, I think they give you maybe like 5 or 6 modules or adventures.
Yeah.
And they were laid out a little differently than the ones I did.
Yeah.
For me, I printed each scene was on a different page.
Yeah.
But sort of the actual, I guess, Catalyst Games produced adventure is sort of a double page spread, and everything for the adventure is on there, including multiple scenes, if it calls for multiple scenes. So it could be like one scene, or it could be 3 or 4. And each scene will have a list of cues and enemies and obstacles and objectives for it. You could, like, yeah, just say, okay, here's what the story is about. Everybody kind of reads it before you actually start playing, so that everyone's kind of on the same page.
But, literally.
Yeah, literally. good one. But kind of like I said at the beginning, it was almost kind of ended up being more fun where people didn't know what was coming next.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I would agree, like, the separate sheets is better. So just thinking that something that Catalyst Game Labs might think about is producing a lot of these little, we'll call them modules, which consists of 3 to 5 pages.
Yeah, I think the next book they're going to come out with is something about spaceships.
Oh, okay.
Space combat.
Maybe not space combat, but, like, in the main rulebook, space combat is very loose. You know, they just say, okay.
Same with every kind of combat net system.
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of whatever the story needs to, whatever needs to happen in the story is kind of what happens. And yeah. If you want to make a brains role for the piloting or like a combat to get on the guns, then yeah. So I don't really know what more they could put out. Maybe just guidelines.
Yeah, that's difficult because in a game like that, the minimalistic approach to rules works for it. But with an just a business model of an RPG, then you can't like stack on all of these rules extra things, and extra books. Like people are going to run out to buy the spaceship book, and because it's the more rules you add to the game, I think the worse it would be, and the clunkier, and it'd be very difficult then to narrate because it's another set of rules that you need to know instead of the basic rules.
Right.
So I'm wondering to just finish the point, for them to make money and get people to buy stuff is. To use the old D&D model, back late 70s, early 80s, is you have the core rule books, and rather than adding all of these other rule books, which seems to be the new RPG business model, is just adding adventure books.
Right.
Yeah. Because I don't see the fun, really, because you are only one of the narrators, I don't see it being that fun or that much fun to build an adventure. Because once you start it, you're basically turning it over to other people to continue it. So it's almost better. And since you've written all those scenes, then nothing's a mystery to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Except to see that it gets off the track. But if you could take it out and nobody bothers to read it, maybe there's some sort of brief blurb on the front that says, blaxploitation, soul patrol, and you're like, oh, this is going to be fun. Yeah. And again, maybe play with the genres. You're welcome, Catalyst Game Lab.
Trademark.
And so we go, all right, let's do the blaxploitation one, or let's do the scary movie one, or let's do the disaster patrol. And then, you kind of crack it open and no one really knows what's going to happen. And it's like, who wants to do scene one? And somebody puts up their hand, there's scene one. And then you just pull out the scenes from the little top secret folder. You go along.
I'm sorry. I might recommend is it's kind of tough because it's sci-fi, so you have such freedom to go to different planets or whatever. But you could package that as an area. So we were playing, for example, on Platform Gamma of this place. If you package it as Platform Gamma, and then each different area of it, you give a scene that could happen in that area. So it's wherever the players want to go, and then that could give you like the bad guys that you could find in that scene, some cues that would fit with the scene, and if you had it, a rough flat line.
Yeah, I could do it. I was almost thinking that the kind of the ability to hop in a spaceship and pretty much travel anywhere kind of, gave you a lot of freedom. And that, for example, the third scene, because I wrote out all the scenes, and I had imagined the story ending up on the jungle planet Neptune. And that didn't happen. But just the way kind of Lyle sort of had events transpire in the second scene to bring things back to what I had written down. You could have done something, Chris, and I'm not saying you were incorrect for doing this because there is no incorrect, but you could have easily said, oh, and you get to the spaceport and, you could have taken us there. So I kind of see the rocket ship thing is giving you a lot of freedom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It gives you an enormous amount of freedom. But in that, it also kind of, with the players able to go anywhere and do anything like that, it makes it harder to create a setup scene. This is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then that's going to happen, which is not at all a bad thing. Like I said, I think one of the best parts about this was the ad-libbing aspect. But
yeah, and you don't even need the SF angle at all. Like, we kind of dropped the like the Flash Gordon aspect, and you made it blaxploitation as science fiction. But it didn't even need to be science fiction. In fact, it kind of wasn't.
Kind of ended up.
Except for the killer bots. Yeah. Turning out.
Yeah, except for the guys in spacesuits at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the name of the weapons.
Yeah. The science fiction helped. Probably you can drop any genre and it can be ridiculous because you can hand wave a lot of stuff. But you could certainly do a fantasy one. And drop in, again, I would say like 80s action movie or Saturday morning cartoons or teen drama. High school drama.
D&D, teen drama.
Yeah, and see what people do with that. It's the College of Magic, but it's really...
I believe really... that's called Hogwarts.
All right. All right, I'm not original at all.
Mr. Potter. Yeah, actually, almost I might even recommend that is have setting and genre separate to it. Throw in whatever you want, fantasy or sci-fi or whatever, but then give it an extra twist, blaxploitation or high school drama or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I would like to see, just as another one is interested in the rules, I wouldn't mind seeing like a book of, well, it could be part of the modules, but sort of suggestions for weapons or other NPCs.
Yeah, bad guys would have helped.
Yeah, because they do have a collection of bad guys in the back. But the hardest thing for me was coming up with weapons, because they do have pretty limited stat numbers. But then they suggest things like, oh, well, if the guy shoots an ice pistol, maybe the GM could have the player make a brawn check to make sure that they're not frozen. Or if they get hit with, I don't know, like in the game, you punch somebody really hard. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, make a brawn check, and I'll make a brawn check. And if you win, the guy will be knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
So... And again, it's kind of fun to fly by the seat of your pants that way, but suggestions would help, because I find that they spark ideas rather than, you know, you get like a blank slate with nothing. You're kind of like, eh, what am I going to do with this? I'm like, oh, here's what they've done, and I can spin that off into something else, or that sparks my ideas for something I can do.
Yeah, there's having a group of NPCs to pull from, especially when it was your first time playing, was very useful. But it's kind of, I had the Killbot robots there, and the thing next to him was some kind of like miniature Velociraptor thing. So
I just like using a Cometarian?
Yeah, it just had its low stats. I figured, that's fine for a guard. So I started rolling, and it hits you with claws.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. Like, yeah, from across the room, he shoots you with his claw?
Well, let me turn the page. Duranthium sword. No, that's not going to work either.
I wonder why that happens. I could see, even though I wouldn't want to see an entire book on spaceships, for example, but yeah, things like a fire gun and make a brains test or you run away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And rather than make suggestions, yeah, like just something like special, you know, every weapon, or not every weapon, but some weapons have a special, and it's just make it consistent. It's either they make a brawn check, a brains check, or some sort of check.
It wouldn't be any good to have it over one page in size, though. It's not something that should take up more than something you just glance at while you're making the story.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even like just like a paragraph, if you would need that.
And you also got to think people aren't going to read the stuff in advance.
Right.
So your NPC sheets can't be too involved.
Mm.
So really, if you can't explain it in the title, such as Space Pirate or...
Killbot.
Or Velociraptor, then...
Neptunian Mind Plant, which we didn't use, but...
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't understand what that is.
Oh, it's a mind plant from Neptune. What more do you want?
Mind plant or mind?
Mind.
Mind plant. I'm like...
A plant that lives in mind.
Well, there you go. I was like, is that what it is?
A single plant that you step on and it explodes.
Well, so they're too confusing. Too confusing.
My poor pronunciation.
No ambiguity, please.
Mind.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I think it was really fun.
Yeah, I had a blast.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I was actually kind of worried when I was putting stuff together last night. I'm like, oh man, this is gonna suck.
Well, you almost dropped the blaxploitation.
I did.
And I said, and after... that's the only thing I want to play.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were serious when you said that. Turns out you were.
No.
Turns out you were.
That was playing more Revenge of the Nerds at the end.
Well,
Lambda showing up.
But as you said, picking kind of a genre that had, I guess, a lot of stereotypes that people kind of latch onto, or at least you know the tone of that kind of story or that genre.
So I think it's pretty obvious, but thumbs up, thumbs down?
No, yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, yeah, total.
Big thumbs up for me. Mm-hmm. Really good surprise, really nice surprise. A system where you don't...
Have to think about a lot of stuff.
You don't have to think, but also that you don't walk away going, yeah, it was good, but there was no... After when we walked away from the table, it was really... That was a lot of fun. There's a lot of cheering and laughing at the end. Then just saying, it's like, that was a really good game. We had a really good time. And then... The only, the discussion wasn't like, oh, but I would have changed this, I would have changed that. It was, oh, we could have these kind of people. We, you know, play it with these people. That would be fun. Or trying it with these genres, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Trying to get these people who haven't GM'd before to run a scene. All right.
Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. Listen to us right there on the website through DriveThruRPG on
Stitcher.
Thank you very much. Post there on the website, on Facebook, in the forums, email us, anything that we can hear from, because we love hearing from you all. And we'll see you next time.
Solid.
Keep it funky.
In space.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG. the one true source for RPGs.
Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.